brothers at CJSF, wish you a fun-filled Kwanzaa and a happy new year.
So come and join
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor. Voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, the Great Acceleration. Earth systems disrupted by permanent growth economics fueled by coal, oil, and gas.
The quantities, the scale, scope, and pace of fossil fuel use ratcheted up dramatically in the middle of the 20th century. And that's the key. The second driving force behind the Great Acceleration was world population growth.
And by the appropriation of natural earth productivity.
Humans as one species appropriate 20 to 25% of the energy available for all other heterotrophic species. Human interference into the MPP of ecosystems has a lot of negative ecological side effects.
Before digging down, a request. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe at greenplanetmonitor.net. The pollution of Earth's atmosphere by fossil fuel burning is just one of the insults our planet faces in this human-engineered age of ours, the Anthropocene. In their relentless hunger for food, fiber, and fuel, humans have transformed an estimated 3/4 of the planet's vegetated land surface and appropriated 1/4 of its natural productivity. Human appropriation of net primary production, or HAMP, this is called. Friedelin Krausman is an authority on this. Krausman is professor of sustainable resource use at the Institute of Social Ecology at the University of Natural Resources and Life Sciences in Vienna. Krausman and I spoke about HAMP and the Anthropocene idea.
Yeah, here at the Institute of Social Ecology, we investigate the relation of societies and the natural environment. And one of the concepts that we use is that of society's metabolism. So the idea that any society, in analogy to an organism, has a permanent throughput of materials and energy. So societies are not only systems of communication, if you will, they're also some inherently physical. Like we as humans, as population, have a metabolism. So that's the minimum metabolism of society is that of its members. But society's metabolism is much more than that, because societies have maintained huge infrastructures, buildings, machineries, all these artifacts. We need to build them up, we need to maintain them, and when we use them, we need a lot of energy to provide services from them. And for that, this kind of determines the metabolism of societies. It means that societies need to extract resources, energy, materials, digest them in their metabolism, and then everything that goes in at some point, often with a time delay, comes out again as waste, as emissions. And most of the environmental problems of the sustainability challenges that we are facing actually are related to this metabolism, either to the input side, providing the resources, or to the output side, when we deposit waste or emissions to the environment.
And the changes that human beings, humanity, has brought about to the surface of the planet that merits this conversation, that leads us to this conversation about entering a new epoch, that we're now at the base of what's called the Anthropocene. And at this base, there's this great acceleration. Mm-hmm. All of these impacts that humanity is having, geochemical, physical, on the surface of the planet. It's all associated with human population growth, energy consumption, and material use. Mm-hmm. So this is the very essence of metabolic activity, human metabolic activity.
Exactly, yeah. This metabolism of societies is variable over time. It's variable across space or across societies. Broadly, we can distinguish three different sociometabolic regimes, if you will, in human history. They all depend very much on the energy system, how societies provide for their energy. And there are hunters and hunter-gatherer societies with an so-called, what we call an uncontrolled solar energy system, because they have no means to kind of control the energy flows. They basically take what's growing, yeah, in terms of food or firewood. And then we have the Neolithic Revolution and agrarian societies, and their energy system is what we call a controlled solar energy system. They also use solar energy in the form of biomass, but basically via land use and agriculture, they try to increase the energy available for human society, to control the energy available that plants produce and that enter food chains. And with the Industrial Revolution, a very new metabolic regime establishes. Yeah? This means a shift from the use of solar energy, from biomass, towards fossil deposits of energy carriers. A shift from biomass as a resource towards the exploitation of lithospheric resources. This also means a shift from a throughput of materials energy through society towards societies that accumulate resources in their buildings and infrastructures. They build up large physical stocks of resources that are then drivers of material and energy use. And overall, these transitions have, on the one hand, increased the carrying capacity of the planet for population. So we have facing growing population numbers. But beyond that, we are facing growing per capita resource use on average on the planet. So with each of these metabolic transitions from hunter-gatherers to agrarian societies to industrial societies and their new energy regimes, we experience an order of magnitude in the average resource use per capita.
Can one quantify these metabolic rates?
Yeah, that's possible. We have tools like material and energy flow analysis, where we try to provide quantitative evidence for that. Yeah? For instance, in modern industrial societies, we use about 15 to 20 tons of material per capita and year. Yeah? In agrarian societies, this is an order of magnitude smaller. That's about 4 tons, mainly biomass per capita and year that we use.
Now, in biological systems, metabolism is, in a certain sense, circular.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we human beings, organisms, generate wastes, but the wastes ultimately get recycled somewhere within the biosphere by other organisms. And I suppose the waste products that we humans produce, I mean, you know, in large cities we're producing our metabolics, biological systems are generating a lot of waste.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, but I would imagine that human socioeconomic metabolic systems are less circular and more wasteful. Is that so?
Yeah, I think that's one of the consequences of this shift from using biomass as the main resource towards exploiting resources from the lithosphere. Because we bring with exploiting minerals, ores, fossil resources, we bring in a huge amount of new substances into the biosphere. The biosphere has mechanisms to digest biotic wastes, yeah, like the wastes of hunter-gatherer societies, of agrarian societies. This was basically biomass input and then biotic waste as an output. And this is something that ecosystems can deal with. As soon as you start to exploit lithospheric resources, this is a totally new quality of waste products. And of course, that's something that is a huge challenge for industrial society, to manage these, on the one hand, large amounts, and on the other hand, qualitatively different types of waste flows and outputs of society's metabolism.
Have you established the connection between, or the association between, trends in metabolic, human socioeconomic metabolic rates and this great acceleration that gets talked about? That now what's being proposed, the great acceleration, began in the mid 20th century, marking the beginning of the Anthropocene.
Absolutely, yeah. What we do see is that from a socio-ecological perspective, we would say that actually the major driving force for this great acceleration begins with the use of fossil energy carriers. This is much earlier. This was 200 years ago when humans started to use coal. Yeah, this was probably a first acceleration of human resource use and of environmental change in the 19th century. Then we have a second phase of this acceleration. This basically starts after World War II with the shift from coal to oil as a major resource, a shift which also drove mass production, mass consumption. And then we do see that in our data that beginning after World War II, we have an exponential growth in per capita use of materials and energy, and at the same time, of course, of the production of waste and emissions. So we do see this great acceleration beginning in the 1940s, 1950s, which lasts about until the 1970s. And then we see a slowdown in this growth, probably related to a lot of different driving forces. One of them probably the oil price shock in 1973, 1979, but also probably some saturation in the Western industrialized countries, and also this transition did not kind of spread globally. And we see then a next phase of this acceleration, actually a second or third phase of this acceleration in the late 1990s, early 2000s. And this process is not so much related to a new resource base of society, but rather to the metabolic transition in the emerging economies, above all in China. So when countries like China, countries in the global south, start to build up these infrastructures and build structures of society that are massive drivers of resource use, that's another massive acceleration in the last 25 years.
Are there planetary boundaries to the rate at which socioeconomic, human economic activity can metabolize energy and matter? I haven't phrased that very well, but there's this notion of planetary boundaries. The Earth is only capable of sustaining so much activity. There are limits.
I would say that actually the whole idea of that societies have a metabolism implies, for being sustainable, that this metabolism, both concerning the input side, so the sourcing of the resources, and the output side, has to be consistent with the source and sink capacities of the biosphere. And this is exactly where the planetary boundaries are located, that we are obviously now transgressing. We all know the work by Steffen and Rockström et al., who tried to define these boundaries. They have defined nine, the most different quantities, but basically it's nine different types of boundaries. And most of these boundaries are actually related to sociometabolic processes. So yes, there are these boundaries.
The human appropriation of net primary production. This is something that always astonished me when I first heard about this in the mid-1990s, that humanity appropriates. At the time, I heard that humanity appropriates 40%. That figure may not be quite right, and I'm sure it's debated. Appropriate 40% of the net productivity of terrestrial Earth. Can you talk about human appropriation and net primary production? Seems to be just a prime measure of the impact that the human species is having on the planet, actually appropriating the ability of primary producers to capture energy and carbon dioxide and turn it into organic matter. Human beings are appropriating this.
This is one way of measuring the size of the sociometabolic system vis-a-vis the biosphere, if you will, is this indicator of human appropriation of net primary production.
And what do we mean by this?
The idea here is that net primary production, or NPP, that's basically the amount of biotic substances green plants produce from solar energy. And basically this NPP is the energy currency of ecosystems, if you will. Basically, this is the energy that is available for all the heterotrophic food chains in ecosystems.
I mean, this is the source of all organic matter on the surface of the planet, ultimately.
Exactly. So it's a very important quantity. It's the energy available in ecosystems, basically. And humans now as a very dominant species, interfere with these processes and appropriate NPP. And they do this by two different types of activities. One is that we change land cover. If we replace forest by a meadow, then usually the NPP on this new ecosystem is lower than in the original forest. So usually we reduce the NPP through land cover change. And then humans extract a fraction of this NPP. They harvest this NPP as wood, as cereals, as soybeans, food for humans, yeah, food, fiber, fuel, yeah. So we harvest NPP, and these processes together, land cover change and harvest of NPP, together this sums up as the human appropriation of NPP. So put in another way, human appropriation of NPP is the difference between the NPP that would be there without land use and the NPP that remains after humans have extracted what they require for their use.
And what are the values of human appropriation of net primary production?
So you mentioned this figure of 40%. This was a very early estimate in the 1980s. And what scholars found out that, of course, this depends a lot on how you define human appropriation of NPP. That you can have differently inclusive definitions of what you consider as appropriated. And this very much defines then if you have values of 20, 30 or 40% of human appropriation of NPP. Currently, the most widely used definition with that you would arrive at the level of NPP appropriation globally of 20 to 25%. And this human appropriation of NPP has been growing over time. It's growing surprisingly not with population growth and GDP, but slower.
Because population growth, I think you've in your 2012 paper, you talk about the period from what, 1910 to 2005, and population rose by fourfold, and GDP rose 17-fold.
17-fold, and hump basically doubled in that period. But still, humans, one species.
Why was human appropriation, why did human appropriation of net primary production not rise at faster, as fast of a rate as population and GDP?
Yeah, here we have what we call a problem shift. Initially, when you convert forest to cropland, in traditional agriculture, you have a very low yield. So you have a very high NPP appropriation through the conversion process, and you get out comparatively little. With the industrialization of agriculture, with the Green Revolution, we started to invest a lot of energy into agricultural production by fertilizers, by agrochemicals, by irrigation, by machinery. So we invest a lot of energy, fossil fuel-based energy, to make agroecosystems more productive, to produce more per unit of land. And this intensification of agriculture allows us to extract more biomass from the ecosystems without increasing hump. But the problem is shifted then basically from the biotic system to emissions of greenhouse gases, which we buy, so to say, with the investments of fossil energy into agriculture and other side effects. But
So I was going to ask you, to put it in a pedestrian kind of way, what's wrong with human beings appropriating that net primary production? Some might say, if we could do it better, if we can exploit all this primary productivity's potential, why isn't that good? What are the negative consequences of appropriating natural net primary productivity?
Yeah, I would say that there are probably two or several answers to that. One is that humans as one species appropriate 20 to 25% of the energy available for all other heterotrophic species. Of course, this is and it's also used that it's an indication also for pressure on biodiversity, because we appropriate an overproportionally high share of the energy available in ecosystem and in heterotrophic food chains, and that has an impact on biodiversity. So hump is often used as an indicator for pressure on biodiversity. The higher hump, the higher the pressure, that humans have on biodiversity.
And natural forests, natural grasslands are habitat for a wide range of species, whereas, you know,
cultivated lands,
tree plantations and wheat fields are not.
Exactly. So this is, I think, one important aspect. And then this intensification process that allows us to decouple biomass harvest from hump brings about a lot of other negative side effects in land use systems. Yeah, the application of pesticides, the application of fertilizers, massive soil management practices. All of this, of course, has side effects, is related to greenhouse gas emissions, is related to groundwater pollution, is related to biodiversity loss. So also here, these human interference into the MPP of ecosystems has a lot of negative ecological side effects. And currently, with a level of appropriation of 20-25%, it's assumed that actually to be sustainable, this has to be reduced. It's hard to say to what level exactly. Yeah, we are not yet at a point where we can quantify this planetary boundary precisely. But basically, we see that with this level of MPP appropriation, our land use systems are not sustainable because we cause a lot of biodiversity loss, soil erosion, greenhouse gas emissions with this type of land use systems.
Are there ways to appropriate net primary production to produce food, fiber, and fuel on the land more intensively but more sustainably?
Well, this is not...
It's the ultimate dream in agriculture becoming more and more intensive and efficient. And presumably less polluting.
I think...
Like doing this at a lower metabolic rate, if I can connect those two concepts.
I think that on the one hand, this, you can't give a global answer for that. Yeah, because I think there's a huge difference between land use systems in industrialized global north that are very intensive, very high-tech, and land use systems in the global south that work differently, both in terms of the management practices involved, the inputs involved, but also in terms of the climates involved. But I think for the global north, I think the challenge here is to, on the one hand, extensify land use systems to make them more sustainable, using less industrial inputs into land use systems, basically, reducing the input of fertilizer, of agrochemicals, going towards a direction of organic farming, which is has a lot of beneficial effects on soil quality, on biodiversity, reduces soil degradation, but has the problem of having lower yields. So I think the big challenge here is to, on the one hand, make agriculture more eco-friendly or ecological without requiring to expand the land we need to produce our agricultural products. So I think it has to be a combination, on the one hand of what's often called demand side measures. So I think on the one hand we consume too many calories today. We have a lot of high losses, food losses. We consume a large share of animal products which are very inefficient. So I think a combination of reducing food losses and dietary change towards diets with a lower share of animal protein, and on the other hand, an agriculture which is less intensive, can provide for healthy diets and sustainable diets without an expansion of the area that we need to produce the food. So it's this combination. And this would allow us to feed a population without increasing hump, basically.
Friedelin Krausman is a professor of sustainable resource use at the Institute of Social Ecology at the University of Natural Resources and Life Sciences in Vienna. Read more about human appropriation of net primary productivity, HAMP, at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. It's something human beings take for granted. The world is a very human place, covered by concrete, tall buildings, cars racing this way and that, food from all corners of the planet, some green space for us humans. Earth's human age has a name, the Anthropocene. Dutch chemist Paul Crutzen coined the term 20 years ago. The Anthropocene, Crutzen said, should be declared a new epoch in Earth history, terminating the one we've been in for the past 12,000 years, the Holocene. Last year, a panel of scientists recommended that Crutzen's idea be moved up a notch, formally designating the Anthropocene in the geological community's official timescale. That idea got deep-sixed by higher geological authorities who think the Anthropocene idea is political. John McNeil was an advisory member of the Anthropocene Working Group and a colleague of Paul Crutzen's. McNeil is associated with the idea that the Anthropocene began in the mid-20th century at the start of something called the Great Acceleration, when the scale, scope, and pace of humanity's impact on planet Earth started to skyrocket. John McNeil is a professor of environmental history at Georgetown University in the U.S. That is where the GPM reached him. How would you define the Great Acceleration? This Great Acceleration that kind of took off, began accelerating in the mid-20th century. What was it? What made it distinct from past kind of human historical events and past sort of environmental events associated with the human species on the Earth? What was this Great Acceleration?
So the heart of the matter is scale, scope, and pace. Humans, for a very long time, have been altering the environments in which they live. But in the middle of the 20th century, they began to do so faster and on a larger scale, and as far as we could tell, for the first time, to fundamentally affect the governing biogeophysical cycles of the Earth, the carbon cycle, the water cycle, the sulfur cycle, and at the same time, beginning to have a profound effect on the climate system. Why did all this happen only then, in the middle of the 20th century? I point to two main reasons, and the first of them is the suffusion of the planet by a fossil fuel-based energy regime. Now, the fossil fuel-based energy regime began earlier. You could say it began in the late 18th century in Britain. You could even make claims that it began earlier than that in China. But the quantities, the scale, scope, and pace of fossil fuel use ratcheted up dramatically in the middle of the 20th century. And that's the key. The second driving force, at least as I understand it, behind the Great Acceleration was world population growth. And this is controversial. Some people disagree, don't like any emphasis on population growth. I happen to think it was the second most important variable after the energy system. And it's incontrovertible that in the middle of the 20th century, a huge acceleration in global population growth took place that reached a climax around 1968, 1970, and has since, in terms of rate of growth, been in decline. So those two things, I think, are the heart of the matter in changing dramatically the scale, scope, and pace of global environmental change to the point where the governing biogeophysical cycles of the Earth were altered fundamentally. That's the Great Acceleration in a nutshell.
Let's come back to that in a little greater detail, fill in some blanks. But John McNeil, can you tell me what impact human beings had back when they were nomadic hunter-gatherers, right? I mean, the modern human species is, a couple hundred thousand years old. Back then, how many human beings were there, 200,000 years ago, and what impact did they have on the land around them?
So